I'm Jeb Sharp, and this is The World. Imagine the places you live and work and play slowly slipping beneath the sea. It's almost impossible to imagine, really. But it is starting to happen in some places around the globe. Low-lying spots like Bangladesh and the Maldives that are on the front lines of global sea level rise. Right now, though, we're going to visit two such hot spots right here in the U.S. They're both tiny islands that are literally disappearing. One's in the Chesapeake Bay in Virginia, and The World's Carolyn Beeler will take us there in a few minutes. But first, we're going to head to southern Louisiana and a part of the Gulf Coast that's seeing the highest relative sea level rise in the country. One small community there has been fighting rising water for decades, but residents have finally decided to give up the fight. Here's that story from reporter Molly Peterson.
The Ile de Jean Charles is about 75 miles southwest of New Orleans in kind of the tattered lace part of the state, where it's all washing into the Gulf of Mexico. I've known a guy named Albert Nakan there since after Hurricane Katrina. He's the chief of the Biloxi Chitimacha Choctaw tribe. They've called the Ile de Jean Charles home for more than 200 years. When I met Chief Albert a decade ago, he didn't really believe in climate change. Now he says he sees it.
Where I was born and I raised that, you can't walk anymore. You sink up to your knees if you go try to walk in there. So something is happening.
Sea level rise is happening, but it's complicated here. Dams now hold back Mississippi River silt that used to replenish the land here. Oil and gas canals have cut up the marshes. Both lead to more erosion. But there's also growing acceptance of the role of climate change. You can really feel what's going on here along a narrow road that connects the island to the rest of Louisiana. This road was rebuilt higher since my last visit, but water still splashes over it.
We tried just last week to get down here. We could not.
Chantel Comerdell grew up on the island, but she doesn't live here anymore.
It's a safety issue now. My dad turned his truck around. There was waves crashing on his truck. It's here. It's now. It's real.
Others in her family feel the risk, too. We're on the porch of a house 14 feet in the air, crowded with relatives. It belongs to Chantel's grandfather, Wen Billiot. He's almost 90. Last time I met Wen, he was intent on staying forever. Now he's not so sure.
I don't know how long the people are going to stay over here. I really don't know. Everything been going faster and faster.
That's about eroding land. Storms also hit harder now and are harder to recover from. But leaving is still hard. Wen's grandson, Kyle, remembers how it was in 1985 when back-to-back storms forced his family to move inland. He was 9.
It was hard for me, leaving this place. I don't know if it was just because of family. You was always in nature. I mean, we always had something to do.
Kyle's 40 now. Gas has been disconnected to the island. A big storm could also end phone and water service. And if the road washes out, it won't be replaced.
They can't save the island. Just the things that you would have to deal with living down here.
The final turning point came earlier this year when the federal government offered the tribe $48 million to move inland. It would be the first federal tax money ever used to move a whole community due to climate change. And the Biloxi Chitimacha Choctaw tribe finally decided it was time to go. The hope here is that with the federal help, the tribe can at least stay together.
Reporter Molly Peterson there on the Ile de Jean Charles in southern Louisiana. The World's Carolyn Beeler is here with me now. Carolyn, you worked with Molly on this project. Where are the folks there actually going to go now that they've decided to leave?
They don't actually know yet. They still have to submit a relocation plan to authorities. But something they are doing is they're already consulting with other communities from around the globe who are facing similar issues to help them sort of figure out this big job of potential relocation.
That makes sense. It's such a big change. So, Carolyn, for your part of this project, you went to that second island we talked about in the Chesapeake Bay.
I did. And like in southern Louisiana, the Chesapeake is a hot spot for sea level rise for a bunch of different reasons. So I went to Tangier Island, Virginia, where people are also facing a very uncertain future. But the residents there are reacting in totally the opposite way. They are determined to stay.
They're digging in. Okay, so let's listen to that.
Tangier is Virginia's last inhabited island in the Chesapeake. It's about 90 miles southeast of Washington, and many of the roughly 450 people who live here are descendants of the original English settlers from the 1600s. Stepping off the boat is kind of like stepping back in time. There are white picket fences and gingerbread houses. The isolation makes for a very tight-knit community.
The people, they grew up with each other, so it's not just that they're each other's neighbors, it's their family.
That's Teresa Vermeil Tyler.
You can't beat it when it comes to raising kids, you can't.
Tyler's husband is a waterman, like many of the men here. They catch crabs and oysters in the bay.
We've been working the waters for a couple hundred years now.
This is Uker Eskridge, Tangier's mayor. He says these days, not everything is right in the bay.
The thing is, the Chesapeake Bay, which has been providing the resource for a living on the island, is now threatening the island.
That's because Tangier is slowly washing away. It's been happening for centuries, but climate change is speeding things up. More land slips under the bay every year. Eskridge took me out on his boat to show me some of the damage. We stop about 100 yards offshore, where it used to be dry land.
They had a small schoolhouse and a small store up here. All of it's underwater now.
The last families left here decades ago, and visiting this spot makes Eskridge reflect on his own fate.
Very discouraging when you look at it. Where we are now on Tangier, we don't have another island to jump to, so we've got to protect the one we're on.
Protect instead of move. That's one big difference between Tangier and the Île de Jean Charles. And there's another one. For the most part, people here on Tangier don't believe in climate change, that pollution is helping to push up sea levels. They think the problem is erosion. Back on the island, former waterman Lonnie Miller tells me he doesn't see sea level rise, but he does see the edges of Tangier getting eaten away by waves.
We don't have no marshes to absorb the water anymore. But is it global warming? No.
What most residents here do believe in is God's will. They say they'll be here as long as God wants them to be. People like George Cannon, who goes by Cook.
The man that made this whole earth and everything, it's all in his timetable.
Now, Tangier doesn't want to leave its fate all in God's hands. Residents want the federal government to build seawalls all the way around the island to protect against erosion, but that could cost millions, and no one's stepping up to pay for it. Meanwhile, the Army Corps of Engineers says sea levels here could rise as much as 6 feet by 2100, and the town of Tangier could be underwater within 25 years.
The World's Carolyn Beeler. Carolyn, it strikes me that Tangier Island and the Île de Jean Charles are really kind of guinea pigs for the challenges of global sea level rise. Is there any kind of plan to help coastal communities deal with this?
There's not, and this is the thing that struck me the most when I was reporting this story. There's no national plan, there's no criteria for who stays and who goes, and this is also the case internationally. Countries have pledged billions of dollars to help, but it's not clear where that money is going or what it's going to do, and this is sort of an existential crisis that's going to be facing a lot more communities.
It's very sobering. Thank you for bringing us these stories. The World's Carolyn Beeler, along with reporter Molly Peterson.
Thanks, Jeb.
You can see photos of what these two islands look like today and maps of what they used to look like on our website, pri.org. And you're listening to The World.